This podcast is brought to you by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the What Do You Do podcast with Kath B. But first, whatever comes out of my head.
This is a delicious orange cake, gluten-free recipe for you. Preheat oven to 160 degrees. Or 140 a fan bake. 2 medium oranges, although my oranges were pretty big. I would have called them large oranges, mine. So 2 oranges, 1 1/4 teaspoons of baking powder, and I actually only put 1/4 teaspoon in, and that's why it didn't rise. I've only just realized that, but it was still delicious. 6 large eggs, 1 1/4 cups of white sugar, 2 3/4 cups of almond meal or ground almonds. Now, basically what you do is you boil up the 2 oranges for 40 minutes. Now, I did 15, then I checked the water level to make sure it wasn't getting down too far. 15, checked the water level 10, and then they were done. Then you cut them into quarters, I did, and let them cool down a bit. And if there's any pips noticeable, you can whip them out. But you leave the skin on and everything. Then you whiz those up. I just did mine bit by bit in the Nutribullet because I don't have a cake whizzy thing. It turns into a puree, and then you just pour that into a bowl. You put your 6 eggs in, or this is what I did, and I just mixed them up with a fork. Then you pour in your dry ingredients and then mix it together and pour it into your greased and lined tin. And Bob's your uncle, put it in the oven. And then you can put icing sugar on the top if you like, or whatever you do, it's just amazing. You can have it with nothing by itself, or you can have it with cream or yogurt, and enjoy.
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
Today, I'm talking with Mark.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Mark?
I'm great.
You're reasonably new to this part of the country, eh?
Yeah, I've only been here for 1.5 years, so.
Yeah. Tell us what you do for a job.
Okay, so what I do is I'm working at the Nelson Market on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Selling my little recycled Remu bits and pieces that are handmade. So I call myself Remu Creek. I have a really large 3-metre sign above my gazebo, so you can't really miss me.
Yeah.
But before then, living in Christchurch, I also did the Art Centre Market for about 12 years.
Doing Remu.
Doing the same, making the same thing. You had to be, because that's a maker's market, you had to make your own stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing imported, all handmade and everything. So that was awesome working there.
What kind of things do you make?
Really lovely wee bespoke miniature recycled Remu desktop clocks.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. And they're all put in a really lovely graphically designed gift box, so really lovely to gift wrap if it's for tourists or local people looking for something really different. And special, even as a keepsake kind of thing. A few people have mentioned that to me, which is really awesome. So yeah, I personally sign each piece on the base, and the little clocks that I put in is a good quality quartz clock, so nothing cheap and nasty, not plastic.
Okay.
They have a glass face and they easily pull out to adjust the time. And the battery is a universal battery that you can buy anywhere in the world and obviously here in New Zealand too.
Where do you get the clock faces from? Or the clocks, what are they? Is it called clock
faces?
Like
a clock, yeah, like a clock insert.
Yes.
Yes, I get them from Japan.
Okay.
Along with like the Seiko batteries and everything like that. Did a lot of homework. And these ones are dearer, but good for me because everything I do, I like to do proper, correctly.
Yeah.
No shortcuts as well as the way I make each piece, you know.
Yeah.
That's, I think, my point of difference. My attention to detail and my patience. Like most wood guys look at it and go, how the heck do you want to spend that long on one piece? But that's what I love to do.
Yeah. Can you go through the process from start to finish for me? Not in too much detail, just tell me how does it start, and also where you get the design, because each one I assume is a little bit different.
It is a little bit different in size and proportion.
Yes.
But they all have to fit in the lovely little gift box.
Yeah.
But everyone's handmade and slightly different.
Amazing.
I love nature, sustainability and recycling. So I've never bought the wood or got the wood myself.
Yeah.
Furniture makers, a lot of them, you know, legally obtain containerfuls of recycled Remu.
Yes.
And of course they make beautiful furniture from it, and they always have short offcuts that they cannot use, whether they're full of nails or there's just some occasional really gnarly, knotted, twisted bits of Remu.
Yes.
Which no one really wants to use in furniture. It's a bit troublesome. But they're the pieces, when I do get them, I actually love to work with.
Okay.
And once you take back all the rawness and silvering of the old wood and that, the grain is absolutely the best of the best. So they're my most expensive clocks. They take me the longest to do, and I don't often get those bits. But when I do, I love to get creative with them and show off nature, you know,
what the
knots and twists look like after you sand it through lots of different grades to get it beautiful and smooth.
Yes, and that's where the patience comes in.
It is, yeah.
I know that I have worked on a project where I was supposed to sand it and get finer and finer, and I was like, oh.
Exactly,
Because I have no patience.
Mm. I just love doing it through that same process I've been taught when I was a furniture maker.
Yeah.
But also the way I do my little miniature clocks now. Been doing it 15 years and I have not tried to do them faster. I've actually got better at making them. Uh-huh. And that's my point of difference. I only try and improve each year.
Yep.
Or I'm not happy with myself and I don't want to sell it.
Right.
So it's a passion.
And I assume you have those people who come up and go, oh, you just sand it. But you also must have those people that come up and go, wow.
Absolutely. And that's what gives me the real goosebumps on the back of the neck.
Yeah, it actually gave me them right then too.
Did it really?
Because I was just thinking.
Oh, yeah.
When you get someone who actually understands the process and knows how long it's taken, that's kind of like the payoff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, there was a lady, she was looking at what I made. I explained, because I have my little old gnarly offcuts on my display table as well as obviously the finished product, so people can actually see where it starts. And then I've got some little pictures up the front where they can see me bandsawing and drilling and sanding as well.
Right.
But this lady, she was just lovely to talk to, and she said, I'm from Auckland. I really love what you do and thanks for explaining it. And she said, I'll just go and have a look around.
Yep.
And I said, there's some amazing stuff to see and have a lovely day. Well, an hour later she came back.
Awesome.
And she said, oh, look, I've looked all around the market. There's beautiful stuff there, but she wanted one of my little clocks for her office where she worked in Auckland. So it was a personal gift for her.
Nice.
And that was the goosebump moment where she's like, this is really amazing. I've never seen anyone make stuff like this before, even though a clock is not a new thing. Mm. But just the way I do it.
Yes.
The quality of the timepiece, the gift box. Yeah, I've tried to just do everything as good as I can so there's no cheap or unfinished parts of the whole process.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
And also that it's obviously very unique because I've never seen anything quite like it. I mean, on average, what height are they?
They would be about, that's a great question. Yeah, about 7 centimetres. Yeah. Yeah. So nice and small and lovely clear clock faces. They also come in Roman numerals or standard numbers, standard Arabic
those
numbers.
Are the choices.
And silver and gold, because the little clock unit easily slips out, so I can interchange them with people like Roman numerals or gold or silver.
When I came to look at your stall and I saw those clocks, it straight away took me back to my grandfather because he had a wooden clock that was sort of shaped similar to yours. It was a bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know those clocks that used to put on the mantelpiece?
Absolutely.
Yep, and it went up like that, and it had the clock face here. And it just straight away reminded me of that, and it really was a lovely thing because it took me back to that time. We've gone through the fact that you obtain wood from people's offcuts.
Yes. Well, what I do is I go into the furniture factories, talk to the boss, tell them what I'm doing, you know, that if I can have a look through some of their really cool offcuts. I don't like to get offcuts for free.
Yeah.
I like to give back. So strangely enough, the love language of most workshops is a dozen beers. Yeah. So every 3 or 4 visits, I just take them in a dozen beers. They love that. That makes me feel better the way I obtain it. And also they will quite often just be working away and find a really knotted piece and think, right, I'm going to put that aside. Mark would love that.
So now you've formed a rapport with the furniture makers around here.
A few wood people,
Nice. Mm. And so you've got all these offcuts at home.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of tools and machinery do you need?
All I have now is a really old school bandsaw that's probably about 40, 50 years old. The oldies are the goodies. They're heavy. Yes. They just purr rather than rattle.
Yeah.
And I love, it's just a pleasure to work with that kind of older school machinery, which I enjoy. Yeah. With each offcut I get, that determines maybe what shape I'm going to make.
Yep.
Whether it's sort of a stand-up slightly taller or that classic, as you mentioned earlier, the grandfather clocks that used to
those
sit on mantelpieces that were
well.
Sort of longer.
Yes.
So they're like miniature nostalgic clocks.
Yep.
Once I get a piece, I work out which way it's going to go to maximise the best grains at the front. I'll literally just sketch it with my black marker kind of thing, check it will fit in the box, and then I'm really just freehand bandsawing it.
Okay. And then after that,
what happens is then I will very roughly sand the wood to get the look of the grain with a real gnarly 40 grit. And then once I've got the rough shape and can actually see the grain from all that age, you know, all the wood comes from wood mills, so it has all those massive big circular saw marks and it's aged. So you get a better idea after I've sanded it with the really coarse 40 grit what the grain will look like once I take it through the 7 or 8 other grades.
Yes.
And at that point, then I work out what's top, bottom, back, front, and I'll bandsaw the base away, which is only about maybe a 1 centimetre bottom bit.
Yeah.
Because that base then becomes wider.
And that's the stand.
And that's the stand on.
Right.
Yeah. And then I'm going through all of the grades from 40 to 60 to 100 to, you know, 120 grit, getting finer and finer because the whole idea is to take the previous grit away to make it easier for the next. So there's a system to it, which, as I mentioned earlier, you can't just cut.
You can't miss a system.
Cut corners or you wreck a blade. And if you burn the wood, then it also cracks.
Yes.
And burns. So there's a few things to think about. Once I've sanded it through about 6 grades, then I will get out my little compass set that I've still got from my fifth form tech drawing days. It's made in Czechoslovakia. It's a beautiful little compass set with green velvet and all that. It's just, once again, pleasure to use. And I work out where the middle of the hole will be for the radius of the drill, because you've got to actually then drill.
I was going to ask that. Yep.
Drill into the wood.
Yep.
And it's a tiny bit of wood. So it's not easy to hold.
Right.
And the drill bits cost me about $200-$300 because it's a special drill bit.
Right.
And I've had to have an engineer calibrate it down to the exact size of the timepieces that so it's a specialised bit of machinery as well. And after that's drilled, then I go through the process of bandsawing either the arc or the curve or whether it's got a, you know, a unique traditional antique looking style top.
Yes.
There's about 4 different shapes that I can do. And then I go to the painstaking job of sanding the base of the clock and the top of the base, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Perfectly flat so I can re-glue them back together at the end.
Yeah.
After I've sanded little curves in the base to match perfectly. So it's a real detailed thing that you kind of can't get wrong.
Yeah.
So I use a really good quality English wood finishing oil. It works really well with my pieces and it doesn't, there's no tint in it. So it's like when you wet a rock, you get the true colour.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. And it's not shiny. So it's not like it reflects in the light. It's just a real natural finish. Yeah, just it works with the pieces that I
make. So you must do that before you put the
timepiece
in?
Absolutely, once I've completely finished and glued the clock top onto the clock base, and I'm actually using 1,000 grit sandpaper. I'm even sanding the little sharp corners.
Yeah.
So when people rub their finger up the corner, it feels sharp, but it's not sharp, if that makes sense. It's a lovely, smooth feel. And I got that instilled in me from the old guy that taught me my cabinet-making apprenticeship when I was 16.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just all that old school, the old school ways, that's the way I make the clocks without any modern machinery, no CNC machines, no laser engraving, all old school.
Right, and a black marker.
And a black marker.
And so from woe to go, from starting with a chunk of an offcut, how long it might take you to make one clock, finish it completely?
Some of the clocks I sell take me between 3 and 4 hours each piece.
Okay.
But the ones I call limited edition, and they're usually the gnarly, knotted, twisty ones with the beautiful grain, which of course not everyone likes. Some of them love the clean, the clean grain. Those limited edition ones, or they're called limited edition for quite a few reasons. The not a gnarly piece, those parts like cratches and tree trunks and branches, they don't come along all the time. It's usually clean wood. They're much harder to work with, rather dangerous to drill. Those ones could take between anything from 5 to 8 hours.
Wow.
If it takes 5 hours or if it takes 8 hours, I'm not bothered. It's a passion.
Right.
And I know it's going to be in the limited edition range, all at the same price. I've got to be happy with it. So every piece is different.
Yeah.
Whether it's pulling out nails, which I call the rustic collection.
Oh, yeah.
And there you can see where I've pulled out the nails.
Oh, that's cool.
Quite often the nails you pull out leave a bit of a oxidized black weeping look into the wood once I sand it back, and that's really cool.
Yeah, really cool.
And sometimes people love that rustic look as well.
Yeah.
Like with the nail holes.
Yes, exactly. I like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So between 5 to 8 hours for the... They are unique.
Very unique.
Doesn't appeal to everyone, which I'm aware of, but the ones that love it are like, oh my gosh, this is... You know, I've had tourists that have given me the goosebumps on the back of the neck, and they've said, we've been all over New Zealand looking for a special gift for maybe family to take back to Germany or whatever, and they'll go, and this is just what we're looking for. And I'm like, wow.
How cool,
so
Mark.
That's so cool. Awesome, yeah,
Mark.
Yeah.
Mark, you work in a market atmosphere, which you've done for a while. What's that like for you?
Absolutely amazing. It fills my bucket up with positivity. The market people are fantastic to work with, supportive, helpful. I've even got to know 3 or 4 wood guys, much like myself, that work at the Nelson Market, and we get on really good. We're all making different wooden things, and it's just really cool.
So it's a social life.
Very social,
well.
Which yep. I enjoy. Yeah, and I guess coming from being shy, it's really cool talking to people about something that I really enjoy making. That makes it easy for me to be social, I guess.
Yeah.
I love the ups and downs of the weather and never knowing who you're going to meet. And,
yes, exactly.
And weather, also weather not knowing, you know, whether sales are going to be good or bad, which they are both. It's just really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. So let's travel back in time a bit.
Okay.
To when you were at school, say. How did you go at school?
I wanted to be a marine biologist. Sort of went a bit wrong there. Went to high school and struggled there. I was quite shy, like very shy. Didn't really even join a sports team because I was just too shy. So I did 3 years at high school and I just wanted to get out. And Dad said, well, that's cool. Get a trade behind you. Yeah. He took me around everywhere.
Yeah.
Just cold calling, just saying my son's looking for work. Yep. You know, he made me front up and introduce myself and that sort of thing. And then I got a call from a guy in Christchurch who owned Opawa Furniture at the time. And I went in there in some of my nice clothes. You know, Dad said, you've got to dress well, son, you know.
Yeah.
And I basically shook his hand. He read a few of my references of other part-time jobs I'd had. And he said, yep, you've got the job. So
amazing.
I said to him, when do I start? And he said, now. So he put an apron on me and Dad drove home and I was labouring there for 3 weeks and then I got the apprenticeship.
So in those 3 weeks, you obviously proved yourself to be a good worker.
Yes.
How long was your apprenticeship?
So the apprenticeship back then was about 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, for the first year, I was pretty much literally making my boss's coffee and hand sanding the tops of beautiful big Scotch chests, you know, the beautiful big bits of furniture with the 4 top drawers and the large big deep hat drawer in the middle and the 3 large bottom drawers.
Yes.
I was literally hand sanding and sometimes I'd go home with my fingers almost, you know, almost raw. The fingerprints wouldn't be there and I'd have to sort of tape them up. But I think I did a few other tiny odd jobs like lifting furniture onto the truck. Oh, one story is, he was a man of few words and I was quite short when I first got the job. And my old school boss, he was that sort of guy like, well, if you're going to work for me, you've got to do everything that I ask you to do. So the furniture truck turned up and we had this beautiful 4-drawer tall boy that we had made that was going on a truck. And so we both picked the furniture up. And because I was quite short, I had to tippy toe to try and lift it up on top of the bed of the truck.
Yeah.
And not realising that the drawers were sticking out the other way. So as I tilted, 2 of the 4 drawers flew out and fell onto the gravel driveway, you know, like half a centimetre into the wood. So my boss just looked at me and looked at the drawers and shook his head. And I won't mention what the truck driver said, but we got on with it. And I thought I was going to lose my job.
Wow.
But that was quite a bad yes. mistake. But sort of not my fault. No. But then, you know, I think, yeah. you know. But yeah, my boss, he was fantastic old guy to learn a trade under. Known in Christchurch as sort of that grumpy old guy, but had lots of respect because his furniture was beautiful. And yeah, I became a really good furniture maker and put myself through night school to sit my trade cert exam, which I passed. And I ended up training 3 or 4 young guys, training them through their apprenticeship. So yeah, I worked for that company for about 12 years. And what actually happened one night was Dad came home and he was talking to a guy at the local workman's club. And he said, I've talked to a guy and he's in the leather industry and he makes pouches and sleeves for these wooden briefcases that this top guy in Christchurch makes, you know, bespoke small things, so not furniture. He's looking for a good tradesman. So suddenly I'm forced to make a little decision, which was good. Yeah, I went in one night and he showed me around and also showed me what they made, which I just shook my head and thought, I can't do that. Really small, handmade, beautiful little pieces. And that's probably where I got the idea for what I do now. Uh-huh. So yes, I worked there for 14 years.
Right.
And then they sadly went into liquidation. Basically, yeah, I lost my job within a week with none of my holiday pay and no back pay, no nothing. So that was a huge blow to me. And at that point, I was, and still am, married to the same lovely lady, Deb, and went home extremely upset. And she said, well, you know, it is what it is. We'll get through it. Christmas is coming. We're going to enjoy Christmas and we'll relook at it in the new year.
Yeah.
So that helped heaps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's when I started going to, first of all, it was the Riccarton Market, and then shortly after that it became the Arts Centre.
Okay.
Where a few people said, well, this is handmade, you should try and get into the Arts Centre.
Gotcha.
That's when I started.
What made you decide that you were going to make clocks?
Yeah, I've always really loved working with small pieces of wood mm-hmm. and loved detailed, gnarly grain, mm-hmm. and I was just trying to figure out how can you turn what most people would just call a basic lump of wood into something that gives it value. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started thinking a lovely timepiece. It took about a year to get them in a really beautiful gift box.
Mark, what advice would you have for young people, say, who are at school and they just have no idea what they want to do with their lives?
It's good to try a few different things.
Nice.
You don't have to like it, but yeah. you've tried it and then you can, you never know what you might come back to.
Yep. Cool.
Get you've given a go.
Thanks, Mark. That was really good and really interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I hope loads of people listen and come down and look at your wares.
Yeah, come down and say hello.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks, yeah. Mark.
Thanks, Kath. Awesome.
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
This podcast was brought to you by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air. Other great local podcasts are available through our website. FreshFM.co.nz